20. Fragments. Titan engines grapple hand to hand and claw to claw on the precipice lip of ragged cliffs that were once Dawn's insurmountable walls. Corpses drift in rank grey water where gas bubbles rise off sewage. High above, on grilled decking and walkways, men brawl by firelight with blades and hooks and clubs. It is frenzied. Blood drizzles down through the walkway grills towards the grey water below. The living can no longer remember why they are fighting. The dead no longer care. Sojuk of the White Scars sheathes his blade in the torso of a word-bearer. Jet bikes roar past him, cannons firing as they rush the enemy charge. Sojuk longs for their speed and freedom. Time, cold and dead, has wrapped its weight around him like loops of heavy chain. Men run through the smoke from nowhere to nowhere, lugging their weapons and their lives, muttering prayers and bewitched by battle madness. From somewhere close, the industrial thunder of megabolters. Ruin roars. The palace screams. Maximus Thane yells to be heard and tries to rally the last of his men. But there, on the tattered edge of the gilded walk, they are too busy selling their lives for the highest price to hear him. Agathe wrenches her bayonet out of her enemy's gut. The fight rages around her along the length of the razor wire line. They are not going to reach Primus Gate. The gate and its fortifications are probably gone anyway. The stone walls of the culvert have become mottled flesh and are covered with names. Closing in, neverborn spectres call her by hers. Corswain, the Hound of Caliban, lifts his bloodstained sword. The blade gleams in the half-light, but that half-light is merely the cold phosphor glow streaming from the eyes and mouths of the ink-black Death Guard, driving up the pass and splintering his lines. There is nothing but shadow beneath the hollow mountain. Corswain has raised whole mounds and hills of corpses and set them aflame, but the mountain itself remains dark. Zephon edges his blade with a whetstone, preparing for what will surely be the last battle of Hasgard, and his last battle too. Fafnir Ran watches him, loading shells into his bolter. On the burning plains, a giant throne of skulls sits empty, awaiting the imminent coronation. Mangler claws gouge open the Shadow Sword's flank, and something inside it detonates. The blast wrenches the Shadow Sword's huge bulk into the air, like a rider bucked from a horse. Jera Talmada, in the turret of her Banestorm, sees it land, burning from within. She orders, "Load!" But the Banestorm's main weapon has ceased. She orders full reverse, knowing there is nothing behind her that is any different from the carnage ahead. Armies tear into armies in ranks 1,000 men deep and 10,000 wide. Spears jab, lifting bodies. Guns boom, shredding others. Broadswords and tactical spathers cleave helmets, crush skulls, and tear pseudo-flesh. Skin rips, blood sprays. Bionic short out and fail. Plasteel cracks. Psychanic energy roils and lashes. Aggression is channeled by hypno-indoctrinated commands, or coded machine pulses, or obsessive training, or merely by a tenuous sense of self. The quaking air reeks of glanded combat stims and piss and blood and fear. Every warrior carries another's death in his fist. The turmoil is unending and unbearable. Horns boom, fire vomits from the punished ground. Adrathic wrath scorches the air. Bodies buckle and melt in waves of xenophasic heat. Tracked behemoths clatter over mud and wire and bones. Voltaic lances gouge and shatter against shield walls, and plated phalanxes punch through infantry lines like chain fists. There is rout and overrun, panic and disarray. Loyal corpses, breathing yet but doomed, rush forwards under standards of foliated skulls and splayed eagles, caked in ash and gore to meet the screaming host of treason, which smashes into their dented shields under banners made of entrails and flags of unblinking eyes. They bear their never-born lords with them on biers, swollen-bellied, horned beasts that whisper unutterable names through blood-flecked lips, or play flutes fresh-fashioned from human femurs. Carious bodies pile up and slither, 20, 30, 40 deep. There is a hercine stink, a reek of nidor, the dry burn of weapon-generated ozone. They kill for the living, and kill for the dead, and kill because killing is all that remains. The bony touch of mortality is upon them all, and their deaths will last forever. It is the final triumph of ruin, hymned by the spit and crackle of the warp. Thus is the malison of chaos. The world hangs badly at an angle. Above, in the supernal realm, the locetic nimbus of the opening warp burns against the blind, unconstellated void, turning in the thestral glow like the wheel of all fortunes, licking spears of lightning down to strike and tumble the last steeples and towers of terror. It is a great eye, like the eyes on the drenched banners far below, its pupil blazing, its sclera bloodshot. It observes the shrieking psychomachia of the species and devours each and every soul that flies up, a furnace spark. It gazes down upon the rock that they call the world as it is dismantled wholesale by a relentless concentration of absolute fury. It witnesses the end of the world, the end of terror, the end of the rock that they kill on and for. The Four watch too. The false four, through the eyes of their avatars in the dreaming shadows of the Lupercal court, the dripping, red-plashed father of massacres, the trembling, feverish grandchild of decay, the languid drinker of delights, shaking with algedonic glee, the squirming, unstable beast of change. They see the plan ended, ruined and unfinished, and signify their approval of that repudiation with the bloody prints of their gnarled and sutured hands. Their laughter becomes the avalanche roar of a falling world. Respond. This is Hegemon Control. Anabasis, respond and verify. The Warcourt Junior at the Mastervox station keeps repeating the same words. She is the third junior to occupy the seat, taking over the task in rotation, repeating the same signal every 20 seconds. Sandrine Icaro and the other seniors in the rotunda are now sure, beyond any doubt, there will never be a reply. Bloody teardrops trickle down Malkador's desiccating cheek. The heat radiating out of him is now so intense, they evaporate before they've barely formed.